Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gabaza, and for today, we're talking about, I don't know how to frame, you know, what we're talking about today. We're talking about data centers, but I wanted to say something clever about, you know, some of the hardware that's helping to power the AI revolution, you know, or something like that, cloud computing, you know, data analytics, all of the big buzzwords that we hear about, you know, physically, that stuff has to exist somewhere. And we are at probably the biggest data center operator in the country, that's Teraco. And we are joined by Jan Nisdo, who is the CEO you know, of the company, just to give us some insight into what's going on in the data center space. I am at one of their campuses in Isando. This is JB5. He'll tell us just now if the letters mean anything at all. But yeah, we also got like a quick tour of what's going on. I was last here in person in 2019. We were talking about it, and there's a lot that's changed during that time. So maybe where I can start, Jan. Thank you so much, you know, for having us at this sizable campus that you guys have here. Maybe where we can begin is always just the context of the company. So I guess the elevator pitch on Teraco and what Teraco is.
Sure. Thanks, Madhu. Thanks for coming through. Thanks for visiting us, and hello to all your listeners. You know, Teraco started some 17 years ago as a business. Actually, we've got really humble beginnings. When we started, we were operating out of a basement in a building in Cape Town. We had probably about a 400 square meter data center, and it was really shared infrastructure between two or three ISPs. Yeah. And then I think a culmination of several factors. One was the business model, and the other one was change in regulation in South Africa. And I can touch on each one, but maybe starting with the regulation. So at that time, and I don't know if you remember back in those days, but we had two or three big monopoly telcos. And Altec actually took Icasa to court and said, you know, it was unfair that folks weren't being issued licenses, and they won their court case. And on the back of that, we had like 200 telcos all start up overnight. And all of them were looking to host their IT infrastructure in a vendor neutral location. So someone that wouldn't compete against them. And, you know, that's our model. Our model is open access. We're not a carrier, so we don't sell connectivity services. And then what that allowed is for all these small carriers and some larger carriers to deploy in our facilities and interconnect with one another, because we don't charge for transit or capacity. We bring the, you know, the running costs of deploying your IT significantly down. And that really was the start of Teraco. So very much telco focused. All the telcos started deploying in our sites. Then what started happening is all the various content providers started coming to South Africa. So content providers, think of clients like Netflix, like Google, CDN providers that deploy rich content. You know, that used to sit overseas, but the quality of service would be pretty poor. Yes. Even though data goes on the speed of light, if you want to watch a video or rich content like websites and things like that, it's a poor quality of service unless it's provided for in South Africa. So a lot of content started coming to South Africa. That started deploying in our facilities. And then we started to move over the last couple of years into enterprise. So I think for an enterprise now, quite difficult for them to operate their own facilities, largely because they were designed some 10 years ago. Eskom operated slightly differently 10 years ago to how it operates now, obviously with load shedding and everything that's happening. And then also the cost of electricity is super expensive. So actually you want to deploy in a very efficient environment where less electricity is used.
Yeah.
To cool. And that's where outsourcing starts making sense. So a lot of enterprises are moving into our sites, and then hyperscalers. So large hyperscalers, for them to deploy, well, South Africa used to access public cloud infrastructure. You know, mostly it was deployed in Europe. And over the last 4 or 5 years, that started to deploy in South Africa. You know, we've got big enterprises, big retailers, big banks, all of them want to move onto the, you know, cloud computing platforms. And as a result of that, the public cloud infrastructure players have all started deploying in South Africa. So, Yeah, a combination of all these things, all happening in the last 15 years. And yeah, it's, Teraco's just been a good story, and a good story for South Africa as well, because, you know, on the back of what we've done, we not only service South Africa, but actually a lot of clients that deploy in Teraco land up servicing, you know, the population in sub-Saharan Africa as a whole. So strategically quite important.
Nice. One of the things that I, you know, maybe wanted to get your sense on, because you operate Teraco, is, I guess, us defining what a data center is, right? Because in a normal sense, the way that I would explain a data center is to say, imagine the storage on your computer, but you need way more. So instead of you going out and buying a bunch of drives, you set up a building that just has a bunch of drives for you that you can access online or through a network. In a simple sense, that's the way that I would describe a data center, you know, to someone. And then obviously through that data center, you can obviously access your own data, you know, to your little building that's at your office. Or your clients, you know, can access, you know, the same data, and it can, you know, help you to, if you're a bank, a telco, whatever it is, they can access portions of your services, you know, through that system. That's the way I would describe it. How would you describe it?
So I'd describe data centers as, actually, it's critical infrastructure. Yeah. And it sits somewhere between real estate, telecommunications, and IT. And actually, all of three of those, they end up putting, you know, their missions critical equipment into a data center. And when you talk about cloud, cloud computing, you know, it's actually not in the cloud. It lands up being in a physical facility. So our big focus is on security, access to sites, and then space, power, and cooling. And the power and the cooling are the two critical aspects. So we make sure that our sites are... Our SLA with our clients is actually 5 nines, so 99.9999% uptime.
Yeah.
We just can't go down, because if we go down, we're going to end up taking our clients' infrastructure down.
Yeah.
So big focus on making sure we provision electricity all of the time. So we invest heavily in, it's in generators and our own energy modules. So basically, if Eskom goes down, we're able to replace that power. And then the big aspect as well is cooling. Cooling is massive, because in each rack, you've got somewhere between, I don't know, 10 to 20 to 30 servers. Each server's got a small chip that sits inside it, and that's spewing out a huge amount of heat. And that heat needs to be dissipated. And actually, in a data hall, if you had to turn the cooling systems off, that hall very quickly would go from like 25 degrees to like 50, 60 degrees, and actually cause massive issues. So big focus on cooling. And then what makes Teraco unique is our business model. So this open access environment where all our clients are able to actually connect to one another. And because we don't charge for connectivity, it's just an interconnect. You know, we don't monitor throughput. We don't monitor the capacity that's happening. The costs of communicating with other parties, the costs of, you know, connecting to the cloud, the costs of connecting to your telco provider have hugely come down in an environment like Teraco, because we don't charge for connectivity. We just charge for an interconnect, which is like R1,000 a month, irrespective of how much bandwidth goes through that interconnect.
So using the, I like the fact that we're now, you know, at a point where we're talking about space, the cooling, and the energy, you know, piece that you mentioned. When data center providers talk about their facilities, I always used to find it fascinating that that measurements are being done in megawatts, right? Because we associate those types of measurements, at least the layman does, where, you know, us non-technical people associate those measurements with energy, right? But, you know, coming back to my earlier example of using the storage example, because it's a bunch of computer storage and computer processing, someone on the outside might be like, why are we measuring data centers and megawatts as opposed to the amount of storage or, you know, processing power that's actually going through you know, the different halls that you guys have here. For me, I think I have the privilege of having walked through some of the halls and seen the systems, and I understand now why it's measured in energy. But maybe you could give some proper insight into that aspect.
Sure. So, look, depending on what our clients deploy, so our clients could deploy storage itself that lands up storing, processing telecommunications equipment, and then depending on what it is, it could be small amounts of data, it could be huge amounts of data, specifically if it's storage. But the limiting factor to whatever gets deployed into a rack is how much power the rack is actually consuming, and then how much can we cool? Because with the laws of physics, we start running out of cooling ability depending on how much actually gets deployed into a rack. So from a data center operator perspective, everything is kilowatts or megawatts. You know, we measure how much megawatts we'll end up getting to site. And then for our clients, how many kilowatts they'll end up deploying in their racks. And that's how we calibrate our data halls. That's how we calibrate our cooling systems. And obviously, in today's day and age, there's a big focus on using less and less energy, right? We want to be energy efficient. We also want to be green. And that's a whole conversation on what we're doing on that side of things. You know, as Terraco, we've invested heavily in our energy efficiency, specifically around cooling. And maybe to explain that a little bit more. So an inefficient data center, so think of maybe a bank's data center or a server room or a smaller kind of a data hall. Typically, for every one unit of energy that's consumed by a server, somewhere between 1.5 to 2 units of electricity will be consumed by the cooling system just to cool it down. Which before I started at Terraco, like, I would have never thought that you would have had this ratio of like 2-to-1. At Terraco, because of the scale and because of how we've invested in our cooling systems, we can actually bring that down. For every one unit that gets consumed in the rack, we're consuming half a unit to cool it down. So there's massive efficiencies being brought to scale. And also, you know, the one thing that guys will say data centers and green or non-green. So as a data center operator, two things. One is we can't control what our clients use.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, big public cloud providers. It could be social media folks, but at the end of the day, it comes to the listeners, right? Everyone's using a cell phone. Everyone's consuming various apps. So it actually comes down to, you know, what is the person in the street consuming with regards to energy. So that's something that's out of our control. What's in our control is how much energy we use to actually cool it down. And a big focus on us has been our systems and investing in our cooling systems.
So maybe we can dive a little bit deeper. Obviously, the cooling is a huge aspect. But in a country like South Africa, the energy discussion is a big one. When I first started at least reading up or understanding how data centers worked, one of the things that I quickly understood is that in a basic data center, you need at least 3 levels of power. Your normal grid power, maybe diesel generators and something renewable, you know, just to make sure that you have redundancy. If one goes out, you have another layer that keeps, you know, you've got your uptime. In a country like South Africa, where for the last 2 years, load shedding has been doing what it's been doing, and I also understand that energy provision also depends on what tier of a data center, you know, you are. Where are you guys, you know, in these tiers that we're talking about? And also, how has, I guess, South Africa's energy situation informed how you guys have set up your energy structures?
Sure. So maybe to talk about the tiering first. So actually, as Terraco, we don't tier our facilities.
Okay.
And that's because tiering was predominantly for folks that weren't in the industry, someone like a bank that was going to build a data center. It gave them a blueprint to go and build the right type of data center. So, you know, we design our facilities to availability.
Okay.
And I come back to the 5 nines uptime.
99.999.
So that's how we design our facilities. And then to get that, it's all about redundancy. So obviously our primary source of energy is Eskom. And we could talk about Eskom and renewables. I think we'll hit that a little bit later. But primary power is Eskom. If that fails, so it could be load shedding, it could be an unforeseen event at a substation, then we have our own energy modules. And those energy modules are diesel generators linked into a power system. And typically our energy module comprises of 5 generators. On this site, we have 30 generators. They're large 2-megawatt generators. And then in the event that something happens to one of the generators, it could be something that happens to a radiator, it could be an electrical fault, we have a backup to the backup. And ultimately, what that means for our clients is they have 2 power feeds into their cabinet. They have an A and a B.
Yeah.
And we guarantee that either on the A or the B, we will always basically provide power. So if something happens on the A system, it could be a generator, it could be a fault with a power distribution unit into the unit, we'll have a B feed. And that's how we provide our 5 nines uptime.
Okay. And where are we right now in the journey around renewables? A lot is said about them, but have we reached the stage or where it's realistic, you know, to expect that a facility such as this could run, you know, on renewables? Or do we still say, you know what, when all is said and done, Eskom or a national utility is still probably your best bet?
So there's a lot in that question.
Yes.
So I think let's talk about renewable energy.
Yeah.
So as Terraco, our big mantra is no harm to our people that work on our sites and no harm to the environment. So we are big believers in renewable energy.
Yeah.
We want to do the right thing for the planet and also all our clients. You can imagine, you know, our clients that we do have, large public cloud providers, large banks, large retailers. You know, everyone wants to do the right thing for the environment. And in order to do that, we have to move ultimately to 100% renewable energy.
Yeah.
And as Terraco, we've got that focus. I wouldn't say it's been easy. I think, you know, just with what's been happening in the liberalization of the whole electrical sector, I think 2 years ago it was going to be very difficult to achieve. But I think with what's been happening in the whole electricity side of things and with Eskom and the new Minister of Electricity, I'm actually quite excited. I'm super positive. And actually the way I look at it is, remember my story about the telco sector and Altec taking Akasa to court. So 17 years ago, we had 3 dominant telcos, very much a monopolistic environment on the telco sector space. Today, South Africa's got the most vibrant telco sector. We've got something like 250 licensed telcos. We've got all the international and African-based telcos coming into our facilities to pick up all the content. We've got multiple fiber providers, multiple mobile operators. So actually, we're very much an open access telco environment. And why can't we achieve the same thing with electricity, right? And I think that's the way the Minister of Electricity is looking at it, which is, so the negative is we're at the bottom of the barrel, right?
Yeah.
So when you're at the bottom of the barrel, why not just make huge changes? And actually speaking with him, I think that's the way he views it. He's, why not what would normally take 10 years of legislative changes to liberalize the whole electrical sector, why not do it now as quickly as possible? And I think with everything that we've seen happen in the last year or two, I'm a firm believer. I'm like super, super South Africa positive. I think, you know, we've got amazing solar array. We've got great wind access. And I think if we open up the whole electrical sector like we've done with the telecommunications sector, it's not going to take long to get back to where we completely self-provision on power. And that's actually what we're doing as Terraco. So we've decided to invest in our own solar plant.
Yeah.
It's going to be a big utility scale solar plant, 120 megawatts. It's going to be built in the Northern Free State. And we got the go-ahead to do that about 2 months ago. So big milestone for us. And now we're in the process of building that solar plant out. And hopefully that goes live in the next year. And that's going to be key to us getting to 100% renewable energy. We'll also be doing a wind power purchase agreement. And then with solar that we've deployed on our rooftops, ultimately we'll get to 100% renewable energy. So a big focus, a big drive, and actually makes me super excited about not only Teraco, but just the future of South Africa. I think we're moving slowly in the right direction.
Okay, cool. And I think on the energy piece, it's a very exciting space, like you said, just all the movements on the liberalization side. We are going to be seeing a lot of innovation in that space, a lot of investment going there. And insofar as we talk about innovations, wheeling, you know, of power is one of those things that's, you know, that's happening now. And it's one of those interesting discussions. You create a renewable plant and you produce energy in one part of the country, and you have credits that allow you to get an equivalent amount of power in your locale, you know, from Eskom. So you've got that net effect. When you are, the way you guys are building the plant, right, is that, I'm guessing that's the same.
So that's key to that is opening. So I think Eskom's doing the right thing. And the minister's doing the right thing, where we're going to have a national grid. I think you do need a national grid. If you take America, for instance, so every country's got its own power challenges. Like America, you don't have load shedding, but actually the grid's pretty much maxed out. And if you wanted to build a solar plant in Nevada and move that power across to, I don't know, Seattle, you can't do it because you've got multiple electrical systems from each state, you know, kind of has its own electrical system. So actually, we come with quite a strong position where we've got this national grid. We obviously need to upgrade it. But then I think if we start allowing these independent power producers, and it could be producing power for yourself, like we intend on doing, or it could be someone producing power and selling it, you know, to Eskom, and hopefully it's renewable power alongside the other sources of power that we have. One is we should alleviate the issues that we have around amounts of power that we're producing. And then the second one is, it's going to be super important for us as an economy to have renewable energy. So if you just take our manufacturing sector, there's a lot that goes for export. And if we want to export to Europe and those kind of markets, there's going to be a big focus on how much carbon actually went into the products that were produced. And, you know, to be competitive in that regard, renewable energy has to be a big focus. Otherwise, we simply won't be able to sell products to countries like Europe.
So in your particular case, you have a solar plant in the, let's say we fast forward, the plant is done. What is that plant doing? Is it, you know, supplementing power across the Teraco portfolio, or is it, you know, targeted campuses for you guys, or is it certain layers of operation?
So So ultimately, we're going to need to actually have two solar plants, each one around about 120 megawatts. Yeah. But that will supplement our daytime use. So it'll be enough energy to provide us for daytime use. That power goes into the grid, and then that'll effectively get wheeled to us.
Yeah.
We might not actually get the same electron, right? It'll go somewhere else. But there'll be an offset with an Eskom. So that'll be enough for our daytime use. And then for nighttime use, it's going to be a combination of wind. And actually, South Africa is fantastic in that regard, in that most of the wind blows at night on the coast. So that, you know, we've got this kind of offset sunlight during the day and wind at night. And then batteries start playing an important role as well. So, and it's just starting to hit now. So the solar panels have just dramatically come down over the last 5 years. We're super efficient. But the same thing's happening with the cost curve on batteries. And that's being driven, obviously, by huge investment by like car manufacturers trying to get, you know, with EVs, trying to get the cost of batteries down. And as those batteries come down, it starts making economical sense to actually roll out more solar, enough that you can use during the day, but then store it as well so that you can then use the power at night. And that's just, that's not science fiction. That's something that's happening now, and the costs are going to keep coming down. And then, so take a home system, you'll double up on your batteries, it'll be super cost effective, and you could roll out panels and start becoming, I guess, self-sufficient. And then there's maybe not so much in the context of South Africa, but just in the context of internationally. You know, we're very harsh critics of ourselves with regards to electricity, but actually internationally, there's a general power shortage. So yes, they don't have load shedding, but, you know, the power grids were built like 30 or 40 years ago, And these are long-term 10-year kind of investments, being power plants, putting pylons and things like that. And actually in America and Europe, the grids are pretty much maxed out. So even though there's no load shedding, if you wanted to build a new steel mill or you wanted to build a new data center and get access to power, really difficult to do. And I think that's going to start putting innovation into new forms of production. And then, you know, there's all talk about, you know, nuclear and potentially more economical forms of like microgrids and basically smaller nuclear plants. Where that lands up going there, I don't know. I think that's going to probably be a, you know, a 10-year kind of transition. But who knows? Maybe it lands up going back to a safer form of nuclear on a smaller basis. So instead of huge power plants, more kind of a microgrid focused.
You know, as you're talking, I'm reminded of two stories. You know, to say that the load shedding situation, it's not ideal, but, you know, we do have to give South Africa some grace. Is the first one was, I think a few years ago, Nigeria completely liberalized its electricity sector because at some point the national utility was just said, you know what, we can't take care of everyone's needs. And they had almost a system where there were so many different utilities under the big one. They just said, you know what, you guys can just, let's just open this up to the private sector. As a national utility, we failed this thing. And over the weekend, the second one is over the weekend, I was hearing a very, what seemed like a wild stat to me to say that in certain parts of the U.S., to your point about the grid being where it is, they actually don't sell what we could, like in South Africa, we have kettles, right, that boil water. Apparently in the U.S., in many, many states, you can't even get a kettle as an appliance because the power that comes to your house is just going to trip if you switch on the kettle because it's too much power draw. That's why they have water heaters. That's why they use so much gas and, you know, all of that. So to your point, I agree.
So I don't know about the kettles, but what I do know, for instance, is all the EVs. So everyone drives there in California. You're driving your EV vehicle during the day and then everyone wants to charge at night. The problem is you've got this, you know, large growing population of EV vehicles all wanting to charge at the same time, right? We all want to charge in the evenings. And that's putting huge, huge strain onto the grid. So actually now you time it, you could plug your car in, but it won't charge. It'll work out to try and alleviate pressure on the grid, work out when you can charge. So it's an exciting future, but lots of investment has to take place. It's not like suddenly every car we can turn into electric and battery car, the grid will fall over.
No, it certainly will. Maybe just to pick your brain, since we are here, I always like getting into the weeds, you know, with experts in any space. How viable is it? Maybe it's not a South Africa case, but as a data center provider, obviously you guys as Teraco have decided on solar and wind. And obviously you made the case just now about some of the cost curves and, you know, some of the conditions in places like the coast that allow, you know, for those things to be feasible. But how feasible is hydropower, for example? You know, could a Teraco, either in South Africa or another country, just, you know, put a turbine inside a dam and, you know, make the electricity that way?
Yeah, so hydropower, so in the Nordics,
yeah,
probably close to, well, 100% renewable energy based on constant source of water, large dams, and you know, pretty much Norway and Sweden and countries like that, basically their grid is completely green. In South Africa, we're challenged. We don't have many big rivers. So that's kind of our limiting factor. But unlike the Nordics, we've got sun. So I think we use solar as our version of hydro. The challenge, though, is sun's not 24 hours a day. It's your solar array is probably limited to like 7 or 8 hours. And then it's to find how do you supplement that. And that's why I think batteries is going to be a huge component. As the cost of batteries come down, that's going to make it more viable for everyone.
And one of the biggest buzzwords right now, I wanted us to turn back to where we started around As a data center provider, you've spoken about the cloud guys, you've spoken about the hyperscalers, you've spoken about the telecoms providers and the content providers. Where's the AI discussion, you know, inside this? How is that affecting, or do you project it's going to affect, you know, your business as Teraco? We are seeing a lot of action around the likes of TSMC, the likes of NVIDIA. They are producing computing power that's shooting through the roof. And I'm sure that is going to be affecting Teraco's oxygen, if not already.
Yeah, so AI, like, super exciting, and it's almost fever pitch now. Over the last, like, 6 to 9 months, I think, you know, the average man in the street didn't know what NVIDIA was 2 or 3 years ago, and today everyone knows NVIDIA and the chips and artificial intelligence. Look, I think that trend's been around for a long period of time. So, you know, I think this whole move to digitization has always been there. Obviously, we had cloud computing, and I'd see AI as an extension of that. And the way I think about AI is there's a stat that today, of the data that's being produced, only 1% of data that's being produced is actually being somehow used for an outcome. The rest is just a byproduct. And what AI now can do is it can take that 99% of data together with the other 1% and actually run it through a model and come out with an answer. So it could be predictive, it could be something like predictive maintenance, working out when things are going to break down. On healthcare, it will be massive. Imagine just all the wearable techs that we have, putting all that data into some form of AI processing engine, and then working out, on the healthcare side of things. I just think it's going to change, you know, massively the way we view healthcare and the way we're able to deal with, you know, diseases and things like that and come to the right answer. So suddenly, now we're able to process that 99% of data. That's going to mean that suddenly that subset of what was the 100% of data is just going to explode, yeah, because you're going to want to create even more data. Yeah. And that's going to be a challenge, especially for the world, because we are power constrained. And if I look how much kilowatts are needed to power AI, like I was saying, you know, 14, 15 years ago, our average rack consumed 3 kilowatts a rack. Cloud computing somewhere between 8 and 15, and now the current computing power is like something like 45 kilowatts a rack plus. So it's definitely going to challenge us from a power perspective and then also a cooling perspective. You know, how do we cool it? And that's the laws of physics and air cooling starts running out at around 45 kilowatts a rack.
Yeah.
And then to cool kind of AI chips, it's going to be liquid. It's going to be liquid cooling, which is basically using a dielectric fluid, taking it directly to the chip and removing heated source. So also super exciting, just this new world of where we're going to. And, you know, there's negative views of AI and positive views of AI. I think we're still at the very early stages. So there's obviously a hype cycle that's happening now. Yeah. But I think this is going to stabilize. And I just see a lot of positives that can come out of it.
Okay. It certainly seems as if a company like Teraco would, you know, would be, I don't want to use the word benefactor, but would benefit from, you know, this, you know, some of those secular trends that are happening, especially around AI and the amount of data. If we reach this 99% that we're talking about, we're now addressing what's actually not being processed. We're currently at the 1%, and it's already a lot. But when we're now, you know, we scale it even, you know, beyond that, it's gonna need even more resources. So one of the things that I wanted to maybe get out of you, because we come from the world of finance, right, is to say, with everything that we've been talking about, the cooling, the energy, the space, the AI, the different types of clients that you have, for an investor who's looking at data centers There's a lot of attention right now on digital infrastructure, a lot of money going into it. Where's the opportunity, you know? If you were to make a case for why someone should write maybe a 2 or 3 billion rand check, you know, to invest either in a data center project or at least be part of a consortium that is investing in the space.
So maybe rolling it one back, just infrastructure in general is a huge topical kind of thesis for private equity investors and public investors around the world. And it's not just data centers, it's data centers, it's power, it's subsea cable systems, everything that kind of revolves around data. And over the last 2 or 3 years, just those themes have like increased. So you've got these massive, I'm going to take it in the context of like the US. So you've got BlackRock, Blackstone, these huge, big global asset managers. All of them are starting to like invest serious money, like tens of billions of dollars, into key infrastructure. So it's not only data centers, it's also electrical grids. They can see that it's maxed out and it's going to need a lot of investment. Individual companies and governments can't do it on themselves. Yeah. So you're going to have a lot of private capital coming into these infrastructure developments. Obviously, for us, data centers, that's our core business. And worldwide, a lot of money has gone, you know, into data center infrastructure. We can see it here in South Africa, just how the industry's grown from 15 years ago. You know, 15 years ago was a couple of telcos and ourselves. And today that's, you know, grown substantially. There's a lot more data center providers in South Africa. So definitely a growing space. Funding wise, I think, you know, financial institutions, banks, they're more aware of critical digital infrastructure. And I think previously it was like a risk. I think when we started as Terraco, there's a whole different story of how we got funded originally. Very much family and friends, then DBSA. Which is great because that's what the Development Bank of South Africa should be, is seed funding. And then we started a journey with the banks. And at first, the banks were a bit skeptical about the business model. But today, we've got, I might as well punt them, APSA has been fantastic for us. They've put together a big funding package together with various financial institutions that they've syndicated to. If it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be able to grow how we have. So that, you know, they have confidence in our business model, you know, who we are as Terraco. We have an amazing team of people, and they've been great backers to us, as well as our shareholders.
And I take it that because you have a bank helping to arrange that funding, that it would be majority debt as opposed to equity, or how has it been structured?
Yeah, so Terraco is, let's start with our shareholders. So our shareholders are amazingly supportive in that we don't have pressure to pay dividends out. So as a result of that, we've been able, all our cash flows have pretty much been reinvested in the business. Supportive shareholders and then banking finance. Again, convincing the banks that the part that we play in the economy. And APSA have been fantastic for us. So that's a critical component. And then I guess other questions like listing and, you know, the big thing for us is getting cash to be able to build our infrastructure. And that's taken the pressure off having to potentially do a listing. Mm.
And on the listing front, what I was interested in when it comes to the funding and listing discussion is not necessarily, are you going to list? Because that's too easy. It's more, is the current level at which a company like Terraco and other data center providers is listing going to the public market an appropriate way of raising funding, or is it still maybe more your development type of finance, or more, I know that other infrastructure providers will go to, you know, the bond market, for example. What's an appropriate structure currently, as far as you can see?
Yeah, so for us, definitely either bond or debt, if we can get debt similar to bond. And basically what we're getting today is debt that's similar to bond. And as long as we're able to access that. So that would be our primary reason for listing, would be getting access to capital. And thanks to our shareholders and, you know, thanks to the financial institutions that support us, you know, we don't need to access shareholder capital.
And for now, it's been private equity guys and the banks?
So we're actually 55% owned by Digital Realty.
Yes.
So that's a large global data center company, only focused on data centers globally. They own 55% of Teraco, and then we're owned by private equity. So we've got three private equity companies that have been with us pretty much over the last 8 years, Primera, Berkshire Partners, also super supportive. So their whole focus has been, you know, instead of trying to optimize what we're doing, carry on investing into what we're doing. And that's allowed us to build out the portfolio the way we have.
And I think that's also been happening in the investment space and around infrastructure is you have this tussle where some people are saying, you know what, we are a fiber provider, we are an undersea cable provider, we are a satellite provider, whatever it is, towers, whatever it is in the digital space, we're going to double down on this and just make sure that we are able to grow our client base, make sure that, you know, we firm up the core business. Whereas others are saying, okay, we'll use the core business in Teraco's space, in Teraco's example, that would be as a data center. And then from there, you then offshoot and say, well, we can now, I don't know, maybe create a connectivity layer, or maybe we can create a managed services layer, or, you know, any other ancillary business. Who knows, especially with infrastructure you guys will have and already have and will have in energy. You know, that could, you know, become a spin-off on its own. How are you thinking around, you know, that aspect?
So that's a good question. So I think I bring it back to our business model. And our success has been vendor neutrality.
Yeah.
And making sure we don't compete with clients that have deployed in our facility. So telcos, we don't really want to compete with our telcos. We definitely don't want to compete with our managed service providers. And actually, to be honest with you, Madhu, we're really good at building data centers. And that's what we want to focus around our data centers. That's our core business. You know, cloud computing and telecommunications and things like that. That's so for us to go beyond what we're doing, becoming an InfraCo or telecoms provider, that's not where we want to go. That'll just defocus us. We want to stick to our knitting. There's a lot to do in the space for us. You know, if I take where we are now and I look at our roadmap over the next 5 or 6 years, there's a lot on the plate for us to do. And actually, the Digital Realty transaction was fantastic from that perspective, because the risk or the fear of some of our clients, say 5 or 6 years ago, was, well, you're owned by private equity investors. Who's ultimately going to be the owner of Teraco? Is it going to be a big telco that's suddenly going to land up competing with potentially some of the clients that we have in our facility? And I think all those fears have been allayed, because Digital Realty is just like us, solely focused around building data centers, operating them, world-class service. And that's, you know, that's what we're going to be doing. We don't have any visions of moving beyond that. The only one thing that we have moved beyond is power. And I think that's also a function of where South Africa is and us stimulating that. So that's probably the one area that's slightly opposed to what I've just said, but as for the other areas, we're just going to stick to anything.
When it comes to that Digital Realty transaction, apart from I guess allaying some of the concerns that maybe clients or investors had about Teraco, has it changed anything in your world?
I think we've managed to get the best of both worlds, to be honest with you. So we've got the benefit of a big brand behind us, but the way we operate, we very much operate as a standalone. So we raise funds in South Africa. And that means as Teraco, we don't have to compete against, you can imagine Digital Realty has got a big global footprint. So they're building data centers in, I don't know, Amsterdam, Sydney, New York, Johannesburg, and then suddenly we're competing against those data centers and our own data centers. Because we fund everything on our balance sheet, we're actually able to focus on what we're doing in South Africa. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, a good thing for us. Our management team's intact. We've managed to, you know, keep the brand, but we also have the digital brand attached to us. And then there's a lot of positives that have come from it. So for instance, sharing of technology, sharing of what we do, it goes both ways. You know, in some respects, we've got some cool stuff. They've got some cool stuff. We're all moving into this AI world. So the more sharing, the better, right? So it's worked out really well for us. We're all super happy.
Okay. Yeah, because I was curious about strategy and, you know, strategy formation and implementation. But like you said, it's you're operating more as a standalone. So I guess you get to sort of dictate what your own, you know, strategy is going to be.
From a South African perspective, yes. Okay. And then when it comes to technology, cooling, you know, we're all hitting this AI world of more requirements, and there we can knowledge share. So, you know, what's our view? How would we design? What are they doing? And and actually our hyperscaler clients are also super sharing. You know, they want to make sure that we're able to provide them services going forward, adequately cool what's coming. So very much a knowledge share environment.
Right. The other thing I was thinking about just now is the growth of a company like Teraco. You're either getting more clients, or existing clients are just consuming more data and require more space, right? What's the driver? Because I'm sure that existing clients are needing more space, but what's the driver for your growth?
So it's actually both. So our existing clients, you can imagine a client that's deployed with us 10 years ago, the size of deployment that they have currently would just be way bigger, just with data. And as more people consume more cloud services, we have a lot of public cloud infrastructure clients, and they're growing. So definitely growing our existing client base, but then also new clients. So probably up to about 4 years ago, enterprise wasn't really a big focus of ours. You know, a lot of the banks had their own data centers and, you know, viewed outsourcing potentially in a different way. I think with what's happening with cloud computing and with what's happening with Eskom have kind of changed that whole narrative. And just around the world, you know, big telcos, big banks are not building their own data centers. It doesn't make sense anymore because there's just huge economies of scale that you get from size. And so for, you know, folks like that to operate their own facilities doesn't really make sense. So a big push into enterprise and that we tackle directly. So a larger enterprise would come and deploy into Teraco directly, but smaller enterprises would go through one of our managed services providers. We've got a lot of managed services providers that use Teraco as their own facilities.
Oh, I see.
And then a big change as well is just the whole movement towards cloud. And I'd say kind of 3 years ago, the view was that maybe everything goes into the cloud.
Yeah.
But actually that's changed. So enterprises, think of a large bank or a large retailer, they're adopting now what's called a hybrid cloud approach. So large amounts of data to store in the cloud actually starts becoming quite expensive. And now, you know, big banks and retailers are starting to take a hybrid approach, which is using different cloud providers, you know, depending on what they do for different areas of service, but also operating a lot of their own on-premise computer equipment.
Yeah.
And then that on-premise computer equipment, these retailers and enterprises are starting to think like a content provider. So they will, instead of sitting on-premise in their own data center, they actually want to deploy that in a facility like Teraco, because Teraco is highly available. So we provide our 99% uptime. But again, that ecosystem that we have of all the carriers, we've got 250 carriers. So think of someone like a Netflix that's deployed in Teraco. Instead of having to deploy in 10 different data centers in South Africa, by deploying in Teraco, they're able to connect to these 250 networks. So it doesn't matter if a user's in Kuruman or Johannesburg or actually in Botswana or Malawi or Zambia, they're all able to access that connectivity. So it's a super efficient means of distributing content. And actually, that's really what cloud computing, public cloud and private cloud, So a company deploying its own cloud would be private cloud, but that's content. And they're starting to think like content providers. And that's been good for us, obviously.
Very fascinating. I think we've almost landed this conversation. The only other thing I wanted to get from you, because of the infrastructure discussion, is connectivity. People are very excited about satellites right now. Lots of people. And my question is a backhaul question. For a data center, is satellite, how do you view satellite versus, let's say, your fiber, in terms of as a point of connectivity, you know, because you need a lot of fiber to backhaul, you know, into the either through internet exchanges, other data centers, into the networks, all of that. So, in your world, where are you guys sitting in terms of the satellite discussion?
So, yeah, interesting question. So we view kind of satellite just as another form of connectivity.
Okay.
So in Teraco, you've got all the subsea cable systems that either go on the east coast or west coast of Africa.
Yeah.
They all end up terminating in our facilities, and their nodes are in our facilities. We've got fiber providers. They all terminate in our facilities. And then satellite's just another form of connectivity. Also a lot of technological changes now from, you know, satellites being super high up. It's now all about LEO satellites, low orbital satellites, and being able to affordably provide connectivity services that actually makes it super affordable in rural areas where maybe you aren't able to get fiber connectivity out. And I think what that'll do is just broaden the reach. But ultimately, the content that's going to be either provided by fiber or by satellite is going to end up coming from a data center.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be stored in a data center somewhere in the world. So, it's going to just be another driver of growing data, because that's just going to broaden the reach of connectivity to potentially areas that wouldn't have had fiber access. Just think of small villages where it might not have made sense to go and draw, 100 kilometer fiber, to some rural community. Now with satellite connectivity, you're able to broaden the reach of connectivity.
Okay. So that's where we end off today's discussion. It has been a really great one with Jan just talking about what's going on in the data center space. We are in Isando, which is, where they are based in Johannesburg. You know, just talking about some of the evolutions, that have happened over time, especially now. He began the conversation by just telling us some of the... We've got our basic understanding of what happens in a data center, but him just describing the value that they offer as Teraco: space, energy, cooling. I think those are the three areas that he mentioned just now. And how, as we consume more data as consumers and businesses, on the other side of the equation, your cloud providers, your enterprises, your content providers, your telecommunications companies are also all, trying to fight to keep up with the demand. And that means that there's growing demand for facilities such as this. And that growing demand also puts pressure on the existing resources. And they are fighting the game of physics right now, especially as, more and more people take up things like your artificial intelligence, because that's going to increase, some of the power requirements. If I remember correctly, I think he said back in the day you were looking at 1 to 3 kilowatts when it came to a rack in a data center, but with the evolution to cloud, that moved up to 12 to 15, I believe, and then now we're looking at upwards of 45, and that might even go up with some of the developments that are happening with some of the hardware makers, some of the chip makers, and the increased demand on that end. Also talking about part of the strategy as well is not to compete with some of their providers. So, you know, Jan just talking about how I think the words he used are, we are good at building data centers, and that's the core business that they're going to be staying in. He sees a lot of room for growth, and there's a lot of problems to tackle in that particular space. Also talking about the funding aspect, because there's a lot of excitement, you know, when it comes to infrastructure, and there's been, I'm just going to call it a shift in some of the attitudes from funders, from lenders, because they're beginning to understand a little bit more some of the use cases and some of the investment cases around some of this digital infrastructure. On this platform alone, we've spoken to a number of banks, you know, consulting houses, you know, that are all funding a lot of infrastructure, and it does seem as if we're going to continue to see, you know, more and more excitement, you know, in this particular space. But what was interesting is that, you know, around the listing question, because everyone always asks, are you going to list? I think the nuance that he brought out is to say that what a provider like this tends to need is more a debt type of funding. You know, if it can be like a bond, then that's great, because you're looking for capital. These types of facilities take a lot of money, you know, to build, but at least the model makes sense, because you've got a book of clients that are going to be paying you on a recurring basis, and they sign relatively, you know that they're going to be with you for, you know, quite a bit of time. So in terms of recouping your costs, it's, you know, the maths makes sense on that end. And then just ending off, you know, talking about where the future lies, obviously talking about the likes of AI, and that will continue to be a huge discussion going forward. So that was us. We're in discussion with Jan Nisdo, who is the CEO of Teraco. Jan, is there anything that I've left out or anything that you'd like to add before we properly close off?
No, thanks. Thanks for your time and to your listeners. Hopefully we haven't bored them with highly technical talk, but an exciting space. And you know, I look forward to chatting and catching up again in the future.
Great. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasted. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.